This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Houston Texans. Texans 3-point favorites in this ball game. I see up here, Nolan, on the one of our three televisions that it looks like they're in Pittsburgh there for First Take. Isn't Stephen A. a Steeler fan?
Wherever the wind blows,
Wherever he drags the Cowboys. That way for sure. We got Cam Newton up there as well. Ryan Clark is wearing a Steeler letterman's jacket. But Pittsburgh getting 3 points in this matchup. We were talking earlier with Rashawn that could Mike Tomlin be on the outs if, in fact, the Steelers do lose. Pittsburgh hasn't won a playoff game in pushing a decade. I mean, that's a long time. And other coaches have been fired for that sort of egregious act. But we talk about stability in Pittsburgh. Three coaches since 1969. Stability in Baltimore, three since 96, soon to be four. I mean, maybe the two most fortunate teams in regards to that level of success. And a lot of it, Harbaugh and Tomlin kept their jobs because they've been pretty good and successful at them. Now you get into this rabbit hole of, man, what if we do bring in insert coach here and we've got 2-4-13s back-to-back, and you know we're going to have to go down this one again.
Right.
Where it's just put it in cruise control and let things take care of themselves with your head coach.
If the Steelers lose tonight, I think Mike Tomlin would deserve to be fired. Personal opinion. Will it actually happen? That's the bigger question. And because it is the Steelers, because they have been loyal to a fault at this point, it's not a guarantee. The only other thing I'm wondering here is, do you think there's any part of ownership over there, because Tomlin and Harbaugh have been so pretty much joined at the hip since they came into the league, compared to each other to no end, that they look at the Ravens' decision and say, well, if they can do it, they were willing to do it. You saw the national reaction from all the people outside of Baltimore. Oh, how could this happen? How could they do it?
Right.
That almost maybe would take the steam off of Pittsburgh following them and doing it. Whereas if they were the first to move here, they would get all that shock and awe. But then they saw it happen with the Ravens and say, well, you know what? Maybe it isn't that bad. We can do it now too.
Now, if they had trounced tonight, I don't think they will. We'll do our picks later in the show. I think they're going to lose. I will give you a spoiler alert on that one. But if they lose 37-10, I mean, the fan base is going to speak loudly on national television for sure. I mean, they were booing Renegade against Buffalo a couple of weeks back towards the end of the regular season. So as much equity as Mike Tomlin has built up there, a couple of Super Bowls, Super Bowl championship, but again, almost a decade out since they won a playoff game, forget about a Super Bowl. You know, maybe it's that fresh voice and the new voice. Who knows what Aaron Rodgers is going to be doing in the offseason. So you're going to go into yet another year, Nolan, where you're going to need another quarterback. And they're getting a little aged on certain parts of the defensive side of things, too. I mean, it's not like it's a team that's built for multiple year run of success. It's a team that's kind of done it with smoke and mirrors and might not be at the height of their powers by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, here's something that I think people are kind of missing in the Tomlin conversation as well, is that it's become so much about the immediate history here, where, oh, they always finish above 500. You know, neck just barely above water, that's a sign that he's getting more out of lesser talent at times. And okay, I've said before, I can't really dispute that. But all of a sudden, people are forgetting the shortcomings of pushing 10 years ago, where you had Big Ben still delivering great results. You had Antonio Brown playing like the best wide receiver in football. You had Le'Veon Bell as one of, if not the best running back in football. There was a year there, 2017, they went 13-3. You lose in the divisional round. So to me, that's the egregious one, and that's where you can make the Harbaugh comparison of Ravens number one seed multiple times. AFC championship game, lost to the Chiefs. those kinds of seasons coming up short, that's what's inexcusable. Not so much the, we just barely limped into the playoffs, and of course we lost in the first round. We weren't even favored to win. You know, right. Why are you getting on Tomlin for that? No, it goes deeper than just the past couple of years here.
And you brought up that 2017 team. Things went haywire for them, being a dominant team, when Le'Veon Bell sat out an entire season, was never the same when he returned. Then Antonio Brown, God knows what the hell happened to that guy, as he kind of went off the reservation a little bit. And then Ben Roethlisberger hurt his elbow, couldn't throw the football anymore. Mm-hmm. So they kind of hit the – that was maybe one of their best teams, that 2017 ball club. And as you said, they lost to Jacksonville in the divisional round at home. Mm-hmm. And they've been kind of the mediocre poster boys ever since then.
And that, you know, they always had their history with New England. So who knows there? I mean, that was a strange postseason in 2017 where the Jags were obviously in the conference championship game.
Blew the game.
So if Pittsburgh's there and they're facing New England, knowing their history, they probably still lose there as well, just because they could never beat that boogeyman that was the Patriots. And to be fair, not a lot of other teams did either.
Ravens did.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, let's get out to the phones. Let's go to Pennsylvania. It's Ben. Ben, thanks for holding. You're on Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw, and Alex Scamponi. Ben. Oh, no Ben.
Disappointing.
Well, I thought it was Ben Roethlisberger. How dare he criticize my throwing. We'll come back. It's the whip around. Speaking of Baltimore sports history, football history, something really awesome happened on this date over a decade ago, and something really bad happened on this date many, many presidents ago, and a Baltimore sports legend got his legendary status, shall we say. Stick around. And then we got longtime NFL writer Howard Balzer talk about the National Football League. And, hey, he was covering the Cardinals. What's Cliff Kingsbury possibly bring to the equation if, in fact, he would, say, get the job with Baltimore, which, by the way, I don't think I'd be cool with, but... Again, Steve Asciotti doesn't ask for our opinion here on 105.7.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bam.
Vinny and Haney's Whip Around.
Every sport. Every game. Everything.
Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. Best crab cakes in Maryland.
Time for the whip around here on this Monday. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw, Alex Scamponi, other side of the glass, and Vinny and Haney here on the Fan. Talked about it earlier in the show. Maryland, a Saturday night, losing to UCLA 67-55. Maryland falls to 0-5 in the Big Ten, 7-9 overall. Play USC tomorrow night, 10:30 tip. We'll talk to Jeff Ehrman about what's going on down in College Park. But how about this? Terps 6-for-33. From beyond the arc, 18%. What's that? Three of their last four games, they've shot less than 20%. From deep, turned the ball over 13 more times, which UCLA turned into points. So the Maryland Terrapins right now, struggle city big time. Still no Pharrell Payne. He hasn't played since the Michigan game, going back almost a month. Game in which I believe Maryland was winning when he left with the injury, but... For Buzz Williams, his first year in College Park, not an ideal situation. An offensively challenged team, and we were talking off the air, this year's Maryland team in regards to shooting from deep makes Willard's team a couple years ago look like the 2018 Golden State Warriors.
Right.
When it comes to offensive efficiency from beyond the arc.
And they're not going to get it back. I mean, the early warning signs were there from really their first couple games, and I remember saying, if this is what we're in for this year, they could win enough games. They could have their moments and be exciting, but you're always going to be just dreading the rest of the season just because of the 3-point shooting, that it makes every single game feel like a chore. And that's where we're at. I mean, with that being said, I did buy into them cutting the lead to the deficit to 5 in the second half the other day, thinking, oh, we might be able to steal this thing. But then I can't help but start laughing because they're talking about it on the broadcast saying, well, they cut it to five. All right, no more three-pointers. Let's drive. Let's get to the rim, you know, try to draw fouls. I'm like, that should just be the philosophy from start to finish, not just because you're now within striking distance. And maybe if you were doing that earlier, you would be able to take the lead or do something crazy and steal one on the road. I mean, I can't justify taking threes at that volume that they are when you're just not seeing results. I mean, Diggy Coit, 1 of 8 from three. Once you get to 1 of 5, how about you pack it in, try again next time? I mean, Elijah Saunders was a nice piece again. Sure. I really like what he's been doing as of late, and he hit some big threes in the second half. But still, man, I just don't understand the reliance on three when it's never going to be your MO.
Yeah, and their strength offensively was getting to the foul line earlier in the season. And Miles Rice has been, to me, a pretty significant disappointment for them, not even playing, coming off the bench a little bit, not providing much when he is in the game.
But there's just not that natural once Pharrell Payne went down, there isn't that natural number two that, all right, we're going to run everything through him. I mean, on a game-to-game basis, if Diggy Coit's on fire, you could feed him. And Saunders has looked fine these last couple, but it's just such a mixed bag. I mean, even Darius Adams, who I thought actually played really hard on Saturday, still extremely inefficient.
Yeah, fouled out of the game too, but shooting threes, not his forte, at least at this early stage of his career. Keep in mind, he was a five-star McDonald's All-American, but USC tomorrow night, you can hear it on the Fan, 10:30 tip-off. That's more of a wake up at five in the morning. Watching the replay of that game. NBA, a couple of scores of local interest in regards to players and teams. Phoenix last night beat the Wiz 112-93. Bob Carrington, Baltimore's own. 9 points, 4 boards, 7 assists. Royce O'Neal had 19. Lead the Suns. It was Orlando 128-118 over the Pelicans. Derek Queen, Baltimore 10-3-6. Desmond Bane had 27, having a really good year for Orlando. Memphis 103-98 over Brooklyn. Santi Aldama, Loyola Greyhound, 15 points, 8 boards, 3 assists. How about Cam Spencer? Also Loyola by way of multiple other destinations. Boys Latin. No John Morant. Looks like he's going to be getting heave-hoed out of Memphis, by the way. But 12 points, 4 boards, 13 assists for the Grizzlies. It was Toronto 116-115 in overtime over Philly. Emmanuel Quickly, Baltimore's own. 20 points, 5 boards, 7 assists. Scotty Barnes had 31, including the game-winning free throw. And it was Oklahoma City 124-112 over Miami. Aaron Wiggins, University of Maryland, had 11 points, 2 boards, 2 assists. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander pumped in 29 for the defending champion Thunder. In the NHL last night, it was Nashville 3-2 over the Caps. Roman Josi had a goal and 2 assists. Capitals tomorrow night will host the Canadiens, revitalized Montreal club. It is the Whip Around. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw here on the Fan. This day in sports history of local interest, Nolan. Today is January the 12th, 1983, Brooks Robinson, Juan Marichal, Walter Alston, and George Kell were inducted into the, or voted in, I should say, into the Baseball Hall of Fame. They would be inducted into the Hall of Fame later in the summer, and George Kell got in as a ballplayer for the Detroit Tigers. George Kell was a third baseman veteran for the Orioles when Brooks Robinson made his debut, so George Kell kind of mentored Brooks early in his career, and I think it was fitting that they both made the Hall of Fame on the same day. And Walter Alston managed the Dodgers for bazillions of years, and Juan Marichal, one of the best pitchers of his era.
Pretty cool. I did not know that. They learned something new today.
There you go. Huh. Now here's bad. Bad in Miami. January 12th, 1969. Baltimore Colts, 19.5-point favorites, according to some odds makers, were upset by the Jets 16-7 in Super Bowl III, which gave validity to the AFL-NFL merger. And then the Chiefs would beat Minnesota, the Vikings, the next year to really prove that they belong. But Bubba Smith, rest in peace, to his dying day, thought the game was fixed. Only two people could have fixed that game. Lou Michaels, the kicker, who missed 2 first-half field goals, and Earl Morrill, who threw about 5,000 interceptions and missed a wide-open Jimmy Orr near the end of the first half. But Joe Namath got MVP. It should have been Matt Snell, the running back. But I want to point this out. This is 57 years ago. The Jets have not been to a Super Bowl since then. They made a couple championship games. A couple championship games. I think Harbaugh's been to as many championship games as the Jets have. But the Jets have not been to a Super Bowl since then. And as I've said a bazillion times, I don't even think Richard Nixon had been inaugurated as president yet. The Beatles are still a working entity, if you dig where I'm coming from. That's how long it's been. And I don't even know if they've walked on the moon yet.
I think they need someone to call their shot like Namath did. I think that's all it took, right? That was the guarantee. Right?
Guarantee we were going to win.
You need a little more confidence. Maybe that's what's holding them back.
56 years, 57 years later. Maybe that's all you need, a little confidence jolt there. And on this day, as we talk about the heartbreak and devastation of that, I mean, if that Colts team would have won that Super Bowl by the 19.5, they'd be considered to this day as one of the greatest teams in the history of the NFL. They did. But this team, they did achieve championship glory because of this beautiful day in Denver 13 years ago.
He's got great speed, but that's not going to get it done.
Flacco stepping up and throwing deep down the far sideline. Caught into the end zone. Touchdown, Jacoby Jones.
Snap placement down. Tucker has it on its way, and it is good. And the Baltimore Ravens, in improbable fashion, in double overtime, have beaten the Denver Broncos 38-35.
And advance to the AFC Championship game where they would beat the New England Patriots in Foxborough. It was Greg Gumbel, CBS, calling the Mile High Miracle to Jacoby Jones. And this rookie kicker, for all of you who think rookies can't rise to the occasion, Justin Tucker kicked a 47-yarder double overtime to seal the deal after... was it Corey Grant forced the fumble, right? He had a pick six in that game, too.
Two interceptions in the game. Yeah. He had the one in overtime that set up the field goal.
And Trendon Holliday returned two kicks for touchdowns for Denver, and the Ravens still managed to pull that one out. But that is one of the great games in Ravens history. At the very least, Nolan, for a divisional round game. Man, tell me one that was better. I mean, Denver was the number one seed, if I'm not mistaken, right? Peyton Manning was going crazy with the statistical achievements. And, you know, Baltimore went in there with the defense. Not, you know, we can sit here, Ray Lewis, Suggs, and Ed Reed all you want. Their defense was middle of the pack that year.
Yeah, it was.
Offense won that Super Bowl.
Literally, Ed and Ray both playing with one arm. Not figuratively, literally. I mean, Ray's all, you know, cased up with his brace. And Ed didn't have anything on, but you could even see it in the way he played. He wouldn't even... attempt to wrap people up and tackle. He'd just throw his shoulder into people, but still made great moments. I mean, what, in the Super Bowl, Ed had the pick. So even limited, found a way to make plays.
Yeah, and that day, before that game, we did the Baltimore Game Day Uncensored pregame show, Green Turtle, at the Owings Mills location. It was me, Jerry Coleman, and Mark Zeno. And, well, Coleman was actually in Denver with the team. Adam Jones called the show. Because remember, the Orioles and the Ravens were kumbaya back in 2012 that season. So how about that?
Good times.
The good old days. We'll come back, talk about the current days where the Ravens are looking for a head coach. And here he's going to be replacing John Harbaugh. We got our buddy Howard Balzer, a longtime NFL writer, talk about that. Now he covers the Cardinals in addition to the league in general. Cliff Kingsbury, would he fit into what the Lamar Jackson in this Ravens offense is capable of doing? Got a funhouse trip, news from the nest, buyer sells at 12:15. Brian Wacker, Baltimore Sun, talk about that Ravens head coaching search. We're upwards of 15 candidates, Nolan, could possibly interview for the job.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wildcard round wraps up tonight. Pittsburgh getting 3 at home against Houston. Some other interesting games taking place over the weekend for sure. Head coaching vacancies, plenty of those. Here to talk about that and more, longtime NFL writer, friend of the show. Let's welcome back our buddy Howard Balzer. Howard, first of all, good morning. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Hope you guys are also.
Yeah, well, for the first time in 18 years, we're sitting here talking about the Ravens looking for a head coach. And I was talking about this earlier, Howard. You've covered the Cardinals, and Cliff Kingsbury was the head coach there a couple years back. He looks to be a candidate perhaps here with the Ravens. What are the strengths, weaknesses? Cliff Kingsbury, who a year ago was a genius working with Jay Daniels, and maybe this year, not so much.
I guess it never ceases to amaze me the things that NFL owners do after a season that wasn't quite up to expectations. And the Commanders are a perfect example. I mean, what the heck? 12-5 in the regular season last year, advanced to the NFC Championship game. And then this year, big tumble, Daniels is hurt, other injuries to the team. And all of a sudden you're changing out both coordinators that helped you do what you did last year. I mean, it's just bizarre to me. And, you know, Kingsbury, you know, no one was disappointed when he was fired 3 years ago by the Cardinals. I have to add this up, Bob, how many head coaches the Cardinals have had in the 18 years that John Harbaugh was in Baltimore. I think it's about 8 or 9, something like that. I mean, they just change coaches at the first sign of issues. And Kingsbury helped that team get better after he was hired. A guy had never coached in the NFL at any level of the NFL, but they went from 3 wins the year before that he was hired to 5 to 8 to 11, and then the playoffs. And then the next season went off the rails, which I would need a book to write about everything, even aside from injuries that happened to that team. And so then they fired him, and Michael Bidwell got in front of the media and said, we need to go in a different direction. And, of course, he did it again this year with Jonathan Gannon after a step-back season. So, you know, Kingsbury, a very good offensive coach. There were questions about whether he was truly the head coach of the whole roster, and did he demand accountability from players and all those things. You would hope that he learned from that aspect of it. And so, you know, he'll get some interviews. I don't know if he'll get hired or not, but the guy certainly is a tremendous offensive coach.
Not for John Harbaugh. You know, he's got an opportunity to, you mentioned Arizona, Atlanta, Miami, the Giants, et cetera, et cetera. He's got his choice, maybe. But what do you think John Harbaugh does? Does he want more of a, maybe I want to be an executive in addition to a head coach? Does he have that kind of clout to maybe request that level of strength? What do you see happening with John Harbaugh over the next couple of weeks here?
That's the question. I mean, in some ways, he's similar to Sean Payton when he decided to get back into coaching after, quote, retiring. Now, a little difference is he was still under contract to the Saints at the time. So any team hiring him had to compensate the Saints with draft choices. Certainly, that's not the case this time around. But Peyton was able to write his ticket. But I'll say this, Bob. It wasn't as if there was 5 or 6 teams lining up at his door to pay him that $20 million a year, which supposedly is what John Harbaugh wants. There's been reports that Harbaugh wants that control over the roster, which is what everybody believed with Sean Payton in Denver. But the general manager that was there kept his job. And, of course, we've seen the success the Broncos have had in his 2 years there. So the key will be John Harbaugh has to pick his spots, and it's going to be a place, I would think, that has a quarterback in place. And so that eliminates some of the teams that are interested in him, but it also means that a team has to be willing to fulfill those things. Now, if he's comfortable with who the general manager is in a place, he could do what Peyton did, but I don't think he'll, you know, compromise too much on the salary. So we just have to wait and see if a team is truly willing to pay what he wants to command.
Howard, let me get your thoughts here on some of these quarterbacks playing in their first postseason. I mean, Caleb Williams on Saturday night, the comeback effort was amazing, made some big throws, but also turned the ball over 2 times. And then last night, Drake May, again, a winning effort, but not what we've seen from him at his best this year. What did you make of those first impressions of those 2 guys?
I think they're very good. And I have to admit, no, I'm not a nitpicker. I mean, guys, the interceptions happen. You know, bad plays happen even to the most experienced quarterbacks. and I've heard this about, oh, Drake May didn't. I mean, the Chargers have a pretty darn good defense, and he still threw for, I believe it, I don't have it in front of me, I think it was 268 yards, and he ran well and made big plays with his legs. So what he has done in his second season, I think, is, you know, pretty strong, obviously, and only bodes well for the Patriots, you know, moving forward. And just like, you know, Caleb Williams, you know, and the thing is, too, they protect him pretty well. They don't have a great running game, but they're able to be productive in it. And I'm talking about New England now, and the same thing with the Bears. I mean, the thing that I always look at, and everybody looks at this, guys, before the season, when everyone says, well, you know, they better get their offensive line right if they want to have success on offense. Everybody says that before the season. Then a kind of collective amnesia, I call it, settles in, because then when there's struggles on offense, no one talks about the offensive line. All they do is blame the head coach or blame the offensive coordinator or blame the quarterback. And so when you look at the Bears with all the, you know, praise, and deservedly so, don't get me wrong, all the praise for Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson. But the thing the Bears did in the offseason is they signed and paid $80 million guaranteed. Two of them were in trades, and they renegotiated the contract for a totally revamped interior offensive line. A center and two guards, obviously. And the sacks of Caleb Williams were reduced, I believe he had something in the 60s last year, to like 23 this season. So the Bears recognized it was more about the head coach. They had to invest and get the offensive line better. And when you see teams struggle, a la the Chargers last night, something no fault of their own because of all the injuries, they couldn't protect or run the ball. And help Justin Herbert make plays. And that, to me, was the biggest issue that the Chargers faced last night. So that's a big thing, you know, for the Bear, you know, for the Bears and the Patriots, is how they have, you know, kept, you know, revamped or got stable the offensive line, and then avoided, for the most part, injuries there. Because you start getting injuries to that line, like the Chiefs and some other teams, boy, you don't have a chance.
And what's your opinion here of the Niners and the way they're playing right now? Gutsy win on the road, but, you know, a team that's dealt with injuries all year long, overcome all of them to this point. Now you've got the George Kittle one. Does that feel like maybe the straw that breaks the camel's back?
It might, because they're going against one of the better defenses in the NFL in Seattle in the next round. But I'll say this about the universal praise for what they've overcome. And they have overcome a lot. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to minimize what they lost. But a lot of the injuries they suffered were in the first half of the season. It settled in the second half of the year. Oh, and by the way, in their 7-2 regular season, 7-2 record coming down the stretch of the season, the two losses were in the division to the Seahawks and the Rams, where they scored 16 in one game and I think it was 16 in one game and three in that one against Seattle. And the other seven wins were against a lot of bad teams, teams that had a combined 70-42 record. And so for the season, so they were able to capitalize on that. But I'll say this, the game against the Eagles, yes, they lost Kittle, but they had Trent Williams back at left tackle. I'll go back to the offensive line again. With all the injuries, they've had a pretty stable offensive line all season, and a healthy Christian McCaffrey. I mean, everyone's saying what a great job Kyle Shanahan did, and he did a very good job this year, don't get me wrong. But last year, Kyle Shanahan was still Kyle Shanahan, and they had injuries last year and only won six games. And a big reason for that is McCaffrey only played four of them. This year, he played them all. And Trent Williams, of course, returned, maybe not 100%, but he was on the field for that game yesterday against Philadelphia. So I go back to the offensive line once again, that's enabled, I think, the 49ers to kind of, you know, stay pretty darn good. Again, we'll see if they can get it done against Seattle, which is a very, very tough matchup for them.
NFL writer, longtime NFL writer, Howard Balzer, here on Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Howard, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll catch up with you as the postseason progresses on to the divisional round coming up this weekend.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
You got it. Howard Balzer, everyone. Minnesota. Pittsburgh taking on Houston tonight, and then we'll get into the divisional round. I did see, Nolan, that the Bills are 1.5-point favorites at Denver. number one seed my ass, huh? We'll come back, reset the program for you. Got news from the Nats coming up top of the hour. Stick around for that. We'll count the early week money at 12:15. And then Brian Wacker, Baltimore Sun, talk about the Ravens. Steve Bisciotti tomorrow meets with the media along with Eric DaCosta. First time for what, Biscuits since 2022? Does that sound about right? It's a long time coming. And then Zach Orr got it, and he wound up, Weaver did, to Miami. And now he's going to interview for the head coaching position today, along with Cliff Kingsbury, Mike McDaniel in a couple of days. And, you know, we'll see what's going on with Minter maybe tomorrow. And then the Rams guys coming up in a couple, like Sala, for instance, in San Francisco, among others. Shula, I don't think he's been linked to Baltimore yet. I mean, Don Shula's grandson, Chris Shula, who's Dave Shula's son, and Dave Shula played for the Colts back in the early 80s. Don, of course, he was the head coach, Super Bowl III, that we talked about last hour, but haven't heard him directly linked to Baltimore just yet.
Yeah, and I wonder how much more or how many more names the Ravens will really add to this list. I mean, I mentioned it earlier, but the search has already been very expansive, in my opinion. I figured there might be like a maybe at least one wild card name in there, like a guy that you're on the surface, everyone's like, well, there's no way he's getting the job, but why do they want to talk to him? There hasn't really been an outside the box one. Even the ones that we disagree with, like we wouldn't be all in on a McDaniel or even a Kingsbury, but you can understand why the interest is there. You know, they're not that far removed from head coaching. In McDaniel's case, just was the head coach, and still both viewed as very bright offensive minds at the very least. So I don't know if there's really been anybody linked to the Ravens that I'm scratching my head like, oh, what the hell is the thought process behind that? But I certainly have the names that I prefer over others. And they did the interview with Clint Kubiak over the weekend. That's still my number one
guy.
Yeah, holding steady on that front.
What about Jesse Minter, though? We just talked to Howard Balzer about the Chargers defense. You know, they had a ton of injuries, but still performed at a relatively high level. And old Jesse Minter extracted whatever was there for Adape Owe, 3 sacks last night, pushing double digits during his tenure with LA after literally having none with the Ravens before the trade.
We can get into it in the next segment too. Yeah. Same with the Weaver topic, but I don't want to get too caught up in the Ravens connection, right? Or him having spent time here in the past. It just seems like when people link those names to the Ravens, that's really the only thing that they have to justify it. Well, he was here, you know, and had success after they left, but is that really the end-all, be-all, you know? And at that point, I don't think they'd be making the hire just simply based on familiarity, but do you feel like you're kind of chasing the McDonald thing, right? Or maybe that would just be more of a fan narrative, honestly. Like, if they went with Minter or they went with Weaver, everyone would be saying, oh, well, you know, they realized they screwed up with McDonald, so they're going back to get the familiar face and right their wrongs. I really don't think those are connected at all. It'd probably just be more of a fan fabrication.
Now, for Adape Owe, counting the playoffs, 13 games with the Chargers, 10.5 sacks. He played 5 with Baltimore, did not record a sack, had 10 last year, which we thought was kind of, you know, maybe an outlier more than anything else, but he showed in L.A., and he's made himself, I would think, a lot of money.
Yeah, he picked the right time.
Now, as he hits the open market there, and might be attractive to the Chargers trying to keep him around.
I think
as well.
If I had to guess, I think they make a strong push to bring him back. You know, you got Khalil Mack there, but he's not getting any younger. And I'm not 100% certain of his contract situation, but he might be a free agent as well. So that might even place even more emphasis on keeping Owe. And I mean, say what you want about what he did here, but I mean, how can you knock a guy? Those were not empty stats there that you listed out. And last night, case in point, multiple sacks and a forced fumble.
Yep.
You know, guys showed up in their biggest game of the year. You know, didn't lead to great team results, but he showed up.
Your preference, ladies and gentlemen, for the Ravens head coach based on the candidates we have heard so far. And as Nolan said, could there be someone else? I mean, who else could it be? Matt LaFleur, doesn't look like he's leaving Green Bay, so cross him off the list. McDermott's got to the divisional round where they're favorites against Denver on the road. They lose there. Could he still be maybe on the outs? And Mike Tomlin, they lose tonight. Should he be the ex-coach of the Steelers? Do you want to go down that one? Because I said it earlier, Nolan, if I'm a Steeler fan, I want no parts of Harbaugh, and as a Ravens fan, no parts of Tomlin. Let's bring it fresh, man.
Yeah, that would be counterproductive.
Yeah.
You know, even if you respect, and I respect Mike Tomlin.
Sure.
But you'd just be John Harbaugh 2.0. Again, and not John Harbaugh building from the ground up year one to year 18. No, it'd be like year 19 John Harbaugh. It would be like nothing changed, really. It would just be a different voice.
You want to get in? Now's your chance. 410-583-1057. We got news to the Nets coming up next. Buy or sell. Let's count the early week money. Stick around for that one and talk about sports subjects of the day. And then Brian Wacker from the Baltimore Sun. We'll get his thoughts on Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta meeting with the media tomorrow. The list of candidates coming in to interview for the Ravens head coaching job is plentiful, covering all sorts of, I don't know, you got your defense, you got your offense. Maybe there's somebody that's good at getting the cheerleaders motivated for a game day. But who do you want to see get the job when it's all said and done? Kingsbury, for instance, to me would be a great offensive coordinator. I don't know if I'm wanting to be the head coach, but again, for the 17th time today, I don't think Steve Bisciotti's texted us. Has he, to ask what our opinion is for this one? No, I don't think so.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.